Hey, it's JB. Welcome to Politicized. Stephen Dorsey is out of town this week. I had a chance to interview Brad Levine, who is, you've seen him on Power and Politics. He's a regular panelist on that CBC show. He was also the late, great Jack Layton's campaign manager in 2011 for the Orange Wave. I always thought they should have called that the Orange Crush. Thought there was a missed opportunity there, Brad. There's tons of shows out there who are catering to people who are interested in politics. I'm trying to cater to those who aren't, who don't know anything.
Okay.
Like me. That's why the show's called Politicized, because I didn't pay attention until 2015.
Okay.
And it was then when it was finally, when it finally looked like the evil empire was ending and there was hope, then I got interested. And maybe because I was older. I mean, I still voted NDP, as I always have, but I've never been happier for somebody I didn't vote for to come in and become the prime minister.
It was time for a change.
Okay, great way to get into this. It's time for a change now in Ontario, isn't it?
Are we rolling?
Yeah, now we're rolling.
Okay, go.
Isn't it?
It is definitely time for a change in Ontario. And it's what's interesting is that... The voters of Ontario, the people of Ontario, have been signaling that for many months, and we're now upon it. And some commentators and observers are going, wow, we didn't see this coming. It's like, well, why haven't you been paying attention?
Every other election on Earth, or every other democratic election, is a change election, isn't it? Once you get to 8 or 10 years or some number, people are like, fuck that face, I want a different face. It becomes totally emotional and irrational, doesn't it?
Every election is one of two. One is ultimately the status quo is maintained. The second election kind is a change election. Sometimes you can go 4 or 5 mandates and still maintain the status quo. Sometimes you go through one mandate and there's a change election.
Who's done 4 or 5? In this quasi-democracy called Canada?
Well, in this province, the province of Ontario, Bill Davis.
When was that?
He was up until 1981, but he was elected in the late 60s.
Okay.
He had multiple mandates. Tommy Douglas, 1944 to 1961. W.A.C. Bennett in British Columbia, yeah. 1953 to 1972. And the Union Nationale in the province of Quebec, Joey Smallwood in the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. So you do have those long-range ones. Even Gary Doer, 4 mandates in the province of Manitoba, 1998 to very recently when Greg Selinger lost.
Is he related to Al Doer, Calgary mayor?
No.
He had a great political slogan.
Which was?
Doer with Doer.
When your mandate is built into your last name, you know what God intended you to do.
Yeah, you can't sidestep that.
No, but this is a change election, and in fact, the 2014 provincial election in Ontario, you could have made the case that that was also to be a change election. But to change, you could have the electorate could be ready for a change, but then look at the offerings and then go back to the status quo.
And Tim Hudak screwed something up. I was living here. I just wasn't paying attention.
2014 Ontario election. You had all the conditions for a change election. You had a government that had 3 mandates. You had a scandal like the gas plant scandal with Kathleen Wynne's signature on the gas plant cancellation. So you had all the conditions that were there. So the public were ready to change the government. But then they said, well, my default in their heads was Tim Hudak. They didn't have confidence in Andrew Horvath at that time to look at her seriously. And then they went back to Kathleen Wynne and said, we can stomach the status quo because change was riskier. Same situation in British Columbia in 2013. The change was absolutely right.
All the polls said.
Well, Adrian Dixon, the NDP, had a 20-point lead for months. What happened there is that the NDP vote just didn't come out. So you maintain the status quo because the offering for change was not right. the conditions in this election in Ontario for June 7th, 2018, fundamentally different.
But has she shown up? I mean, if we knew it was a change election coming, if all these smart people knew this was going to be it, how come Andrea Horvath wasn't creating headlines way before the campaign even started?
Because it's hard when you're the third party to create headlines. The playing field levels out when the writ gets drawn up, and it's now an election campaign. But you could see...
But Doug Ford was doing stuff before the playing field. He doesn't care about a playing field.
Well, Doug Ford is the leader of the opposition, and he also has a gift to get headlines or sound bites. But election campaigns are call on those politicians to do more than just the cheap sound bite.
Right.
And what was interesting is that the campaign that you see now, and we
are... Sorry. You just said he's the leader of the opposition?
Well, the leader of the party in opposition, for sure. Doug Ford, yes.
Right. He's the leader of the party in opposition, but he hasn't done any governing. He hasn't done any, critiquing that the opposition does.
Well, no, he doesn't have a seat in Queen's Park, granted. But when you become the leader of the party that's the official opposition, you become the de facto leader of the opposition.
Okay.
The only expertise he has is he was a one-term city councillor and one that had a really bad record. He voted the wrong way on most issues, and he also had a very bad attendance record. But people are not going to be looking at his legacy at City Hall as they're looking at him for premier. Those that like him think that he was a fighter and a scrapper and supported his brother. And those that don't like him know what he's all about. It is that middle group, that those that don't know much about him. And this is the interesting trajectory of this election campaign. Because for far too long in Ontario, you have a three-party system with governance, for the by and large, changing between the Liberals and the PCs. So most people, and I'm talking about all the millions of potential voters, they, if they're not a Liberal, then they think that the de facto default is the PCs. This has changed in this election campaign because for the first time in a generation or two, people said, well, wait a minute, I want change, I want win out. Wait a minute, the default is Doug Ford. I don't like him. Well, who's this? Andrea Horvath and the NDP. And ever since that light bulb moment went on for millions of people, you've seen her trend line of support go up since the election's been called. And that's where we find ourselves today.
So would you be happy if she was leader of the opposition?
No, I want Andrea Horvath to be the Premier of Ontario.
I mean, that's the traditional role of the NDP.
Well, not everywhere, not all the time.
Federally,
and we were the official opposition in 2011, for sure. And that was a high water mark, for sure. But I think that this Ontario election is fundamentally different from elections that we've had in the past.
Because people aren't swinging from left to right. They're going to swing from left to left.
I don't think people view the choices as in a binary left and right. I think what they do is they say, I want change. Kathleen Wynne and the Liberals have been in for far too long. I don't want Doug Ford. Do I trust Andrea Horvath? Is she a credible alternative for me to vote for? And unlike 14 and unlike 2011, she was also the leader of the NDP there. She has now built up a credibility with the electorate to say, I like her. I trust her. I like what she's saying. And she's run a very strong campaign, which she did not do in 2014. So the conditions are completely different.
What did she do in 2014?
She ran I'll break it down into two categories. One was, it was very cautious in terms of the things that she wanted to do. And I think that by and large at that time and still today, people want bold initiatives. They want the right initiatives, but they want to be bold. And I think this is a time for bold. Things like, it's time to get pharmacare going. It's time to make drugs available, affordable for all ages, not just some. Time to make dental care.
And sorry, Kathleen's made it available, hasn't she? Doesn't OHIP cover?
OHIP Plus covers under 25 years of age and over 65 years of age. But everyone in between status quo.
Right.
Andrea's plan covers every Ontarian, regardless of your age.
How does the Ontario NDP get over the this like legacy feeling that the NDP doesn't know how to manage the money?
Well, it's interesting because the New Democratic Party gets criticized from time to time. And for liberals, where that mostly comes from, why those attacks are falling flat is because the liberals have an abysmal record on math. And the Tories, the Progressive Conservative Party, don't even have a platform out. We can't analyze Doug Ford's math. He hasn't put out any platform.
Which is really good politics.
I think that that's actually hurting him because...
His polling numbers are still up there in the 40s, aren't they?
He's dropping. The last three polls have the PCs
Which poll
in
is
decline.
This?
There was the Ipsos poll that came out with Global on May 23rd.
Uh-huh.
There was the Abacus on Pulse poll that came out on May 21st on Victoria Day. Both of those have the NDP and the Conservatives within 1 point of each other. One poll has them at 35-36, and the other poll has them at 37-36. For all intents and purposes, the New Democrats and the PCs are tied. But you got to look at the trend line because we're still 2 weeks away from the election. So it's like we're not voting today, although some people can vote in advance polls. Those that choose, you can start voting now at Elections Ontario offices. What you look at is the trend line. So since and before Victoria Day long weekend, Andrea Horvath's trajectory in every poll is on the upswing. Every poll since Victoria Day or even before then has the Conservatives on the decline. And Kathleen Wynne is certainly in the decline. So she's now in the high teens, low 20s. The seat projections, if you take a look at the ones that have come out in the last couple of days, she's looking anywhere between 2 seats and 6 in the entire province.
Wow. And that's where the NDP is now, right?
The NDP has 20 seats in the legislature.
Has 20 seats, but 4 in the GTA, is that right?
At the dissolving of the last parliament, there was, I think you'd have to go to there's 3 in Hamilton, 1 in Oshawa.
So they have to, there's a lot of urban ground to cover.
Absolutely. Now, when we take a look at those regional breakouts for the last couple of polls, the NDP are winning in the 416. The NDP are winning in Southwest Ontario, which includes basically everything in the 519 area code. They're dominating in the north and are tied with the PCs in places like Central Ontario. And the only regions that they're behind right now is in the 905 and in the Eastern Ontario, behind the Conservatives. The Liberal Party does not lead in any region in the province right now.
Yeah, that's not the threat any longer.
No. This election is simple. This is Doug Ford will be premier or Andrea Horvath will be premier. Those are the only two options that are open, and it's the only thing up for discussion at this stage.
There's only one party on the right, though. Are you worried about the left vote being split?
No.
People going back. Shy Liberals. What about shy Liberals?
What about them?
Are they out there? Are they like, no, I'm not going to admit I'm going to vote for her. And then when it comes down to it, they're alone in that tiny little closet. And they're going to go, oh, fuck this. I don't even know Andrea. And that guy's a maniac. I'm just going to go with, she's tough.
No. I don't believe that there is enough shy lib. I'm sure we could come up with multiple typographical outlines of individuals who may or may not be like that. But here's the answer to the question. It's because Andrea is not pulling just from Liberals. If you've watched her trajectory go up over the last little while, she's pulling from the Liberals and from the PCs. Those who are traditional PC supporter women don't like Doug Ford, and they can't stand Kathleen Wynne. They're starting to show up and vote for Andrea in the polling numbers. So it's not just this binary left and right thing. Certainly there is a lot of... And I've done door knocking for Bhutila Karposhi, the NDP candidate in Parkdale High Park. We've been door knocking with her in the last couple of weekends, and it is amazing. We've been sent into predominantly liberal, strong polls. That is, you know, quadrants of neighborhoods, streets that have a high turnout of liberal voters. And we ask the question at the door, do you agree that the Wynne government should be reelected? And to a person, I've not found one former liberal voter that says, yes, Wynne deserves to be reelected. Now we have the discussion. What do you want to do now? And the second sentence out of their mouth, I don't want Doug Ford. I'm voting NDP.
And just, so it's a vote against Doug.
It's a vote for a bunch of different things. One is they want change, and that's what I think the electorate have decided kind of en masse. 83% in that Abacus poll, 83% of the respondents said they want change. That's huge. That means only 17% are open to the status quo. So now that you've got this change environment, the question then becomes, what kind of change do I want? Do I want Doug Ford? Do I want Andrew Horvath? And so Horvath has been able to put together a coalition of voters who, yes, some of them don't want Doug Ford, but it's not a blank check. They also like her platform. They like her talking about things like, better childcare, ending student debt, making dental care more available. Her program,
has it worked for her that the liberals have eaten the NDP up for lunch, for real estate, for platform? I mean, the liberals federally and provincially have been edging left for years. And now, instead of being squeezed out, she's like, hey, I can still give you all this stuff.
The interesting thing is that Kathleen Wynne has tried to tack left in order to win government back in 2014. It's a progressive province, right? It is a fundamentally progressive province. And, you know, as a social democrat, I'm not afraid of the idea where multiple parties are competing, selling the social democratic message. I'm not saying that Kathleen Wynne's a social democrat. She's not. She's a liberal, and she'll do anything to get elected. And it took for her in 14 to tack left, and people said, I like this agenda. But after a while, with all the scandals, with all the problems that came with Kathleen Wynne, looking out for herself, looking out for the Liberal Party, people have just said, you know what, enough. And now all of a sudden, the issues like increasing the minimum wage, childcare, dental care, pharmacare, those things are very popular. Well, the Liberal Party has helped the NDP set the table for this election because they have made the issues that are core to our principles quite popular. They've started the process, but they haven't finished the job because they're incapable of finishing the job, because they were role-playing, saying, vote for me and I'll bring in a progressive agenda. Well, at the same time, they were being liberals. And fundamentally, that's where we're at today, where the idea of enhancing the social safety net in Ontario is very popular, and we thank Kathleen Wynne for legitimizing all of our ideas and values, but people want somebody that they can trust and somebody that will carry those issues forward, and it's not Kathleen Wynne.
No, it's not. But is it Andrea Horvath? I mean, there's very little evidence that she's the one. She's never proven to anybody that she's the one that can carry the football into the end zone.
And sometimes, and we point to other examples, in Manitoba, Gary Doer was a universally popular leader in the province of Manitoba. He was the opposition leader, it's a two-party system in Manitoba, for 10 years, election after election, he'd lose. But what did he do? He got better. He got smarter. He met more people. He brought in a great team. He listened to people. And then by 1998, he was unstoppable. And he won in 1998. He won in 2003. He won in 2007. And they won again in 2011 because he had that run, that long runway up to it. Andrea became leader of the Democratic Party in 2009. She's ran in 2011, 2014, and now she's in first place. She's the most trusted. She's the most likable. She has the highest approval ratings.
But don't you wish she was creating some headlines like 6 months ago?
No, because election time is when things matter. Andrea Horvath and her team are the only party who have actually been able to implement the game plan. What was she doing 6 months ago? Well, in addition to being at Queen's Park and holding the Wynn government to account, she was putting together the campaign that you see before me. I'm not interested in last September, last October. I'm interested on Election Day 2018. Because if the trend lines continue, we're looking at an Andrew Horvath premier of Ontario. And then all the work leading up to this moment was worth it.
You must have, there must be a ghost of the bridesmaid lurking deep in your mind, like, no, we're the NDP. We're going to be the opposition. Isn't there like 10% of your brain going, just bracing yourself for this is going to go south?
Well, you don't prepare for failure. You fight for victory. But this isn't won yet, right? We still have 14 days to go before Election Day. We have to get those early ballots in the ballot box. And you don't take things for granted. You see, there's a fundamental difference between liberals and the Democrats. We don't take things for granted. We don't just snap our fingers and ask for the media to give us a hand because we failed and we need them to back us up. We've had to fight, New Democrats have had to fight for every vote, every seat, every election win as possible. It's like, you know, it's an uphill climb for us. Liberals, in my opinion, have an attitude, especially Ontario Liberals, where they're born on third base and they think that they hit a triple. Mm. Whereas New Democrats...
That's a good analogy.
New Democrats have to fight for every square.
The other fundamental difference is the NDP is an ideological party. It's a party that says, this is a better way to live, mm-hmm. to me, in my mind.
Sure.
Which makes them great with the checks and balances. But actually leading... And I think that I represent a lot of people. They're like, the NDP, it's a great idea. And I love that they're there tempering everything. They're like Lake Ontario. They temper the weather, but they're not actually the wind. They can't make Jack Layton's windmill go round.
If you like... The things that this country identifies itself with, things like Medicare. When we brought in Medicare in Saskatchewan, we started it in 1947 with a bill to ensure visits to the hospital. And as time went on, every election, Tommy Douglas fought for another mandate to take Medicare to the next level. By 1961, there was a full-on, we had Medicare at the precipice. The doctors went on strike. The insurance companies went crazy. They fought. And, oh, my goodness, Mr. Douglas is in trouble. This is going to be awful. They fought, they fought, they fought, they fought. What happened? They won. And then every other province. And then eventually the federal government comes in and says, this is wonderful. And today it's part of our Canadian identity. We don't get things. If you want the social democratic values, these things that we're talking about, covering prescription drugs, covering childcare, covering dental care, all the things that, or increasing minimum wages, those things aren't handed. There's not a group in the back going, okay, we're going to do this now. It's no, you have to fight for those things. And the greatest leaps forward happen when we elect good governments. And New Democrat governments have brought this country a lot of the things that we've see that we didn't have to be in government for it to happen. But at the same time, like what you see in the province of Alberta with the best environmental, one of the best environmental policies in the country for sure, the New Democrats bring in good legislation, good programs that then the rest of the country says, why don't we do that? We paved the way. But in this case, out of the three choices that we have, Wynn, Ford, or Horvath, regardless of she is the most trusted, she has the highest approval rating, and she's the one that people go, I am comfortable with her governing. I like her to govern.
Where do you stand on balanced budgets?
I'm in favor of them.
And will the NDP, will anyone ever run a balanced budget?
Well, if you look at the NDP platform, they come into balance before the Liberals do, and we don't know what the PCs will do on balance because they haven't given us, the people of Ontario, a platform yet. But I will make one, I like the reason why I like balanced budgets is because I'd rather precious tax dollars go to the programs that people need than interest on debt. That's just my personal opinion.
Right.
But I like this platform because
so you're not going to balance a budget to pay down the debt. You want to balance the budget. You want to take care of people and not spend more, not spend above your means.
Well, ultimately, that's what you want to do. But here's the problem that here's the difference between the NDP platform and the Liberal platform. The Liberals keep offloading expenditures and costs down to the future because their goal is to win the next election as opposed to get Ontario on track, whether it's the economy, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education. It doesn't matter. They won't, and the Tories won't tell us what their numbers are. So let's get into Doug Ford's. This is the fundamental difference and the choice that people have on June 7th. Doug Ford wants to cut $6 billion out of the Treasury. That is $158 billion expenditures annually in the province of Ontario. He wants to cut $6 billion. But he won't tell us where. He says he's going to find
inefficiencies.
He calls them efficient. I'm going to find efficiencies. Well, you know that there, to find $6 billion in efficiencies, you have to close dozens of hospitals. You have to fire tens of thousands of nurses and teachers.
But he's not going to do that.
Yes, he will.
He's saying stuff. Like as much as he promises what the things he's going to give, the cuts he's going to make, they're so vague. He doesn't actually have a plan, do you think?
He does not have a... But he
so
has
he's,
to
so
cut.
He's not going to make these cuts.
Because
see,
he's
the
not
left
gonna...
is always like, he's going to take away everything.
He will.
Including your teeth and your children. He's a monster, which I think does a disservice on the left.
No.
I think it's this hyperbole, this drama, he's a monster, where in actual what would serve us better is if instead of saying he's got a plan and he's going to do all this evil stuff, he doesn't have a plan. He's just saying that number.
He's saying that number.
I don't think...
Where is he going to get the $6 billion from?
Who are the people? I don't think that's as important. I think that's what he wants the left to start losing their shit over. I want to know the people behind him. Like, he's not thinking about all... He's not coming up with a strategy. It's the Harperites that are in the room behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, so I want to know how they came up with $6 billion. Because they're not going through a line item on a spreadsheet going, yeah, this equals up to about $6 billion. I think they have like psychologists who are experts on groupthink going, six is a really good number. This is going to resonate. Just say $6 billion. As long as we don't have a platform where people can check, then you just say whatever the fuck you want. And then we'll deal with it later.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's the danger. That is precisely the danger. So we can only go on, and
I yell all the time? I get so strident.
This is a fundamental mistake of the PC campaign, right? So there's a bunch of reasons why Doug Ford is going down in the polls right now. And one of them is because in the absence of writing things down and showing the people of Ontario what you're going to do, where the money's going to come from, he allows his opponents to extrapolate where the thing. So he says a couple things. He says, I'm going to cut $6 billion, but he's not done yet. He's also said, I'm going to cut $5 billion in corporate taxes. Okay, so now we're up to $11 billion off the treasury. And he's not shown one place where that's coming from other than vague things like efficiencies.
But again, I think this is where the partisanship can cloud the reality. His people have thought this through. They've said, okay, now the left, when you say $6 billion, the left is going to fill in the blanks there, and they're going to come up with all these stories. How can we weather this? Okay, well, that'll bring down our numbers this much, but as long as he doesn't get caught out on an unforced error, as long as our candidate isn't actually talking about details, he's going to maintain these numbers over here.
Okay, here's my theory, because I don't necessarily agree. I think that he's come up with a percentage just a, pulled it out of his hat and said, "I'm going to cut blank percentage of the of the budget."
You think all those Harperites that are strategists have said, "Yeah, go ahead, pull a number out of your head, Doug. Let's run with it."
Yes, I do. They came up with a number, and what they're doing right now is they are in the back room scrambling, like bloody murder, to figure out how all of his commitments, whether they're cuts, reductions, tax cuts, expenditures, because he's also going to get $5 billion in transit. Like, we haven't even gotten, we've only scratched the surface. If you added up all the press releases that he's been announced since the beginning of this campaign, he's going to spend billions and billions and billions, and he's not shown anybody the math. You've got a default saying these guys are masterminds in the back because they were with Harper a couple of times and he won a couple of elections. Well, that doesn't make them geniuses. This is Doug Ford. I don't even know if there's an umbilical cord between what the leader is saying and what HQ is saying. But we have to challenge, and we have to be
sure.
We have
it seems like there's an umbilical cord because he's been great in the press.
Has he?
Well,
I open up my newspaper.
There's
and he's
no
got,
skeletons in his closet. He hasn't said anything bad.
Okay, I'm going to share with you some skeletons.
The left wing keeps talking about the RY slackers, or whatever his gang was called in the 80s when he was dealing hash in Etobicoke. That was the last piece of dirt they can get on him. New Jersey didn't do very well, but Chicago's okay. The company was his dad's, but he's worth millions. Like, there's barely any dirt that anyone's... I think he's running... great defense. It's for his to lose, and as long as he doesn't say anything, he's going to win.
I think that he is in a daily scandal. So today he's dealing with it. This is Thursday, so he's dealing with a scandal today, where he's on tape paying for bogus memberships to get his what the media reporting his mistress the candidacy for the PCs in Etobicoke Center.
Yeah, that's more like it.
But
this
that's,
is more like
that's
it.
That's today. Yesterday, it was a second candidate of the PCs who was caught in the 407 identity theft ring that leads to PC nomination fraud. Like, there's been scandal after scandal, fraud after fraud, and he still doesn't have a platform. It's like he's so distracted with these scandals, real scandals. Like, his mistress in a condo in Etobicoke that he's paid for, and he got her the nom. That this is what the media are reporting, and he's sitting there on the defense saying, "I'll have more details for you on that later." So I'm sensing this: all the air is coming out of Doug Ford's balloon, even among his target audience. And I submit, if you take a look at what is Ford Nation as of 2 weeks before E-Day, it is a handful of. I think some PC people are PC traditional voters. You know, the Bill Davis, you know, the nice...
old white people.
The traditional PC voter is looking at this guy going, wait a minute, this is not my party. This is not who we represent. This is not the way I want to see my party conducted. And this is not the way I want Ontario. This is why Andrea is getting support, not only from Liberals, but from PCs. This is why we're doing as well as we are in non-traditional areas. This is where it's coming down to. So if this trajectory upwards that Andrea's got, while the downward decline for Ford continues, these scandals, and with the absence of him having a platform or any numbers, this could be quite a very interesting election day.
So what does the NDP have to do in the next 2 weeks?
Well, it's a very...
To stop him. Do they pile on?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of different, I think, questions that the party can answer. And one is, you've got the Liberals doing the NDP a tremendous favor and have been actually for quite some time. And that is, each attack from the Liberals against the Conservatives helps the NDP. So that's the first thing. So again, today's announcement with the Liberals put out a recording of Doug Ford selling at a Tim Hortons with his alleged mistress bogus memberships and paying for it himself, as opposed to the individual member paying, which is the law. Those things help. Andrea needs to continue to offer that positive, hopeful message that has gotten her to first place so far. People inherently want to vote for something as opposed to vote against something. I think that people want to say, true. I want to vote for this as opposed to I've got to go to the church basement, Elections Ontario, and vote against that guy. What if you married the two? What if you actually had a candidate like Andrea Horvath who said, listen, you want a better Ontario, you want these things that help make your life more affordable for you and your family, and at the same time, we don't have to go back with a Doug Ford.
Has she been saying that?
She's been saying iteratives of these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But today, and so for the remainder of the foreseeable campaign time ahead, she's going to be out there announcing her positive plan. So today was 4,500 new nurses to help the hallway medicine crunch. So every day while Wynne and, you know, who's now in desperate third place and getting questions about, like, how many seats could you possibly win? Is it one or two? And Ford's up on scandal. There's Andrea talking about how we can improve healthcare.
So she wants to maintain the message or make those bold moves you were speaking about?
Well, I think the bold moves have already been made because I think her platform established, and that was dropped just before the writ was dropped, basically the terms of what she wants to do. She needs to keep that momentum going, and I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see her in areas of non-traditional strength. I would love to see her rally and have, you know, hundreds and or maybe 1,000 people out in a place where you go, wow, this is real.
What kind of place would that be?
Oh, somewhere where maybe the Democrats haven't elected. I was in Brampton last on Victoria Day.
Brampton is PC, PCville, right?
Well, Brampton is the one and only seat that the NDP has ever won in Bramley Gore Malton and Jagmeet Singh won provincially in 2011. Now, his brother is running in his seat because Jagmeet's moving to the federal level. But you're right. Peel is a big region. It's got all of Mississauga, all of Brampton. We had 1,000 people in Brampton. People came from all over. It was wonderful to see. But yeah, I mean, pick a non-traditional place. Maybe right in Doug Ford's backyard. Who knows?
That would be bold. Okay, so what is going to happen to the Liberals? Are they going to do anything? Are they going to come out? Are they going to pull out all the stops? Are they going to... Is it desperate? Yeah. Are there going to be desperate Hail Marys coming?
We may see that. I mean, you have to bring them on to talk about that.
But what about... What, are there skeletons in the NDP closet?
Well, both the Liberals and the PCs have been taking shots at the NDP. I'll be frank with you. I mean, I've run war rooms at the federal level, provincial level, and the attacks against Andrea at this stage are pretty thin gruel. Like it's pretty lame.
Do people respond to those?
No, I think you need something. Like if you want to knock the candidate with the momentum, to knock them off the momentum, you really got to get them at the knees on something that's fundamentally essential to their brand core elements, right? So Tim Hudak, for example, 2014, he was all about, I'm going to create jobs, I'm going to do all this kind of stuff. And then he was going to cut he was going to cut 100,000 public sector jobs and create 1 million jobs. And yet he counted the same jobs each year afterwards.
How does a mistake like that get made at that high a level?
Well, that was a pretty big one. But the reason why it was effective and why people started to kind of second guess them and gave Wynne her second chance in that election campaign was because it went right at the core of Hudak's appearing strength. Right, so we think he's going to be good at job creation, and then the guy can't even get his job creation numbers right. So they've been taking a lot of shots at Andrea. Have any of them landed? I would submit. I mean, obviously, people are going to say, "Well, that's obvious, Brad. You're not going to admit that any of them." But they really haven't. Because they've been weak. The Liberals have spent all their time digging up dirt on Ford. Ford's been digging up all dirt on the Liberals.
The NDP is coming out the middle.
But I don't believe that, like, you know, this is very likely to be a wave election.
What does that mean?
Wave elections are a momentum for one party takes over, and it's maybe it wasn't predicted as often as it could have been, but there are conditions that allow for a whole bunch of people who have never done something before to all of a sudden vote a certain way, and their neighbors are doing the same thing, and people throughout the province are doing the same. This has potential. And again, it's 2 weeks to go, and nobody's counting anything out just yet, but this has the potential to be a wave election. And when you get a wave election, these kind of these little spitballs from your opponents don't mean anything, because the desire for change is bigger than maybe something bad on a candidate, or the desire for a policy that's going to help you and your family is more important than, you know, a mathematical mistake in the
platform. Right. Do the low polling numbers of the NDP in Alberta and the NDP federally have any negative impact on Andrea Horvath's campaign?
No, I don't believe so. And I say this because people, I think, have the ability to isolate the election that they're in.
The only premier that is less popular, the second most unpopular premier in the country is Notley.
I don't think that any... I don't think that matters in an Ontario context, because we're not voting for Rachel Notley here. We're not voting for Justin Trudeau or Jagmeet Singh. People know that this is an opportunity to get rid of Kathleen Wynne. Do you want Doug Ford or do you want Andrew Horvath? I think that, you know, and we must treat the voter with respect and understanding of what they're voting for.
Does the voter vote for their local MPP, or do they vote for the premier?
Most voters vote with the leader in mind. There are going to be some voters, very small group, who will go, I know who's going to win the provincial election, but my local MPP, who's not part of that party, has been a good soldier, or been good to us, so I'm going to vote for them. And that's why you see, you know, like today, Hazel McCallion there, she endorsed Doug Ford.
Who's that?
Former mayor of Mississauga. She's an
icon. Hazel, the picture of corruption, the limos and first class trips to Ottawa, all that bullshit?
Sure. She came out with a video today saying, vote for Doug Ford. He's going to clean up Kathleen Wynne's financial mess.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, here in Mississauga, I'm also endorsing Charles Soussa, the Liberal finance minister. Now, the question that becomes is, why would you endorse Doug Ford to clean up the very mess that your local endorsement made?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't think that's going to carry much weight at the end of the day.
No, Hazel's nuts and old. Does your partisanship, do you ever think, like late at night when you're in your house, do you ever think... I've been an NDPer for so long that I'm not able to actually see what's going on. Has that ever?
Opposite. Because I am a partisan Democrat and I've worked for the party many, many years. I haven't now for 5 or 6 years, but I volunteer in campaigns and such, and volunteer in this one, full disclosure. What I try to do is ensure that the party is listening to the average people, the average folks, and not losing that ground. So it's like, you know, you want to channel what you see in your neighborhood, what you see from your children's soccer team and hockey teams, and make sure that the party is always going to be open to being inviting to those people that live around you. So it's not imposing the partisanship on your neighbors, it's imposing your neighbors on the party.
Does your heart ever sink when you're knocking on doors? And you gotta press a lot of flesh out there. Especially the candidate. The candidate has to put up with so much. Like politics on a regional level, with its inclusiveness, makes for a wide tapestry of personalities and shapes and smells. Are you ever like, fuck this. I just want some normal people.
Where do they live? Okay, a couple of observations. So first of all, I mean, candidates do a heck of a lot of door knocking in all parties. So it's just a general comment. And we should give tremendous credit to those that do that, particularly when they're in an uphill battle, whether it's their local riding, which is maybe it's a non-traditional one, or when they're losing the provincial election. So, but what I find fascinating, and I've as I was saying earlier, I've knocked on some doors with a local candidate here in Parkdale, High Park, and what I'm looking for, I can handle the rejection when people say, you know, nobody says get off my lawn, but when people say no, thank you, I respect that. And people in Toronto, to be honest, are the friendliest. My goodness, right? I've knocked on doors in a bunch of different places across Canada. People here in Toronto are wonderfully friendly and engaged and want to talk to you and are very respectful. And even if they know that it's part of the process, and that's how politics gets done in this country. But there is no better gauge as to what's going on in the Ontario provincial election than just knocking on some doors.
Do you miss being in the war rooms?
There are days. But I love the work in campaigns. I absolutely relished it, particularly when you've got a leader and a platform for, you know, a program that you are personally committed to. Then, you know, there's nothing that could stop you. I'm privileged to have spent I think 7 elections federally and a number of provincial and municipal elections. It's a wonderful.
Didn't you ever want to run a campaign of somebody who would actually become the prime minister?
Well, I did. It was the 2011 election campaign with Jack Layton.
Didn't you ever want to have a winner?
Of course, that's why I did it.
Pierre Elliott Trudeau was an NDPer.
I heard,
and he said, "I'll never get into the PMO." With that color, I'm going over here. Did you ever feel like, you know what, I'm going to try. I'm just going to move over here a bit.
No, because...
just to get that first place.
No, listen, and this is a good question because it goes to the motivation as to why you do what you do. I don't do this to get power for power's sake. I do this as a vehicle to advance the values that I have. They're inherent in me. They're part of me. They're never going to change. And politics is a place where you can exercise those values. And you can get those values through. You always fight to win. But if I were just in it to win, then I would have no values, because winning is a value in itself. Do anything to win is a value, which I don't hold. I actually call on many of my liberal friends who will believe anything to get them to be in power. Well, that's bloody easy, in my opinion. Mm. Oh, sure. I could win, too. If I just said anything that was going to be popular, take any position, or abandon any community, or, you know, turn your back on justice, that's easy to do. And you can do it, and you can win. But at the end of the day, why'd you do it? I'm not here for this. I'm here to win. But I'm here to win because it's a means to an end, not the end in of itself.
What keeps a Kathleen Wynne going right now?
To be honest with you, I mean, you'd have to ask her or her people. But she is, you know, to be fair, she is a fighter. I thought that she showed that fighting spirit in the last election campaign when things weren't looking well, and she pulled out a victory. And I think it's an attribute that people admire in her. But I don't believe it is enough in this election.
Is she doing it now so she's got a job afterwards? Like, I know, like, I'm trying to picture it. You can't just go, well, the numbers are terrible. I'm going home. You two, battle it out. I realize she doesn't have a choice but to keep fighting. However... you'd think there'd be some more slips, some more chinks in the armor, if your heart wasn't into it anymore. But she has this, and Horvath too, but with different circumstances, These people, these leaders, these like alphas have this ability to just like put the blinders on, and they still got the smile on their face. They're still shaking hands. They're still talking to people. They're doing this micro tiny work where if you just looked at that, you would think this isn't going to change anything. But they can't stop themselves. Maybe it's just habit.
Well, I think that for leaders that are on the decline and on the way out, I think there's something inside of them that they recognize that there's people that need to see you fight, even if you're going down in the polls. And again, we don't know what the outcome is going to be, but
those people are like potential employers in the future.
No, I don't. I honestly do not believe that she is playing for the next job. People at that level,
because McGuinty did that, didn't he?
Former premiers of provinces like the province of Ontario will not, they're not looking for the next job.
No,
they're I think there's higher calling here. This is legacy stuff. Mm. She wants the history books to say she went down fighting. That is an admirable and that's a good attribute to have. And I think that at the core, that is what she is doing. The problem is that the province has now decided that they want change, and she's not part of it. And that's fundamentally the... And history in the highway is littered with politicians who have had a fine run, have done admirable things, and whose time has come, and some can leave before they see defeat at the ballot box. Others confront that defeat at the ballot box. And if these trend lines continue, she will be a part of that. But I don't think she's doing that for future employment. I think she's going to be just fine.
He's the senior advisor for the Ontario NDP campaign and a principal and vice president at Council Public Affairs and proud resident of Parkdale High Park. Brad Levine, thanks so much.
Thank you.